From the grim darkness of Thatcherite Britain comes Rogue Trader.
Fortified Niche.
Hey, hey, fellow BBS heads who spend 96 hours downloading this episode from our bulletin board. It's Fortified Niche again. It's your favorite boy, JC Dent, followed by the other host, Kassa.
Hi!
We're doing this in Radio Free Australia. I'm the most famous emigre from occupied Lithuania. I'll keep doing this podcast until the country is free. God knows whenever that will happen. It's 1987. You'd hope it would have happened by now, but it hasn't. The Soviet regime seems as strong as ever. They even saw fit to get a interview by the great demon herself, Thatcher, published on radio.
I mean, that's pretty exciting, but a cool voice to have broadcast across the nation.
I mean, I'm sure that if it will do one thing, it will make the empire last even longer. I don't know what her idea was behind that. But anyways, we're not here to talk about the worst person who chews up jobs and shits out privatization. We're talking about something good to come out of the blighted islands of the Baiti, a new game.
It's a new game?
Yeah, it's called Rogue Trader, and it's not about trading stocks.
Is it about being a privateer?
It may be about
being naval.
A privateer. Actually, it's not a naval game. Have you heard of this Games Workshop out of England, right?
Yeah, is it based on that Elite video game? We sort of like transport goods back and forth, fighting whoever you want to fight.
No, they're actually based. Their fame comes from Warhammer Fantasy. If you've heard the setting and the game, a funny little company started out by reprinting Dungeons and Dragons in Britain, and then got on to do other things.
Oh, yeah. They did all the, they're publishing D&D over there for a while and making their own minis.
Yeah.
They saw where the real money was, making your own games.
Yep, and now they've started a new thing. So, like, if you have a fantasy offering in the books, that's Warhammer Fantasy Battles, they decided to do a sci-fi game. It's called Rogue Trader, subtitled Warhammer 40,000, or maybe it's the other way around. The book is printed somewhat haphazardly. And I've heard this appendix, the Warhammer 40K stuff, was only added to differentiate the game more from Rogue Trooper.
Yes, I can see how that would be a concern. But Rogue Trooper is pretty tits. It's like, if you're doing a sci-fi setting, just do Rogue Trooper.
Well, what if instead of Rogue Trooper being a blue bare-chested guy, you would have a whole army of Rogue Troopers, only instead of gene therapy, they had drugs and power armor?
That sounds not that different. What color is the power armor? Is it blue? As long as you've got blue guys fighting guys, that's all I really care about.
Well, yeah, it's mostly, at least on the awesome cover, blue guys fighting what seems to be a sci-fi type of orc. Never seen that thing before. And it has a whole new universe spun up in it, and they've put quite a lot of text to show the new universe. Surprisingly enough, despite the name communality, it's not set in the future of Warhammer Fantasy.
Yeah, I didn't see any dwarves. I saw some lizardmen, though. I think they're called Slan this time, but they're quite clearly lizardmen with guns.
Yeah, they're quite clearly lizardmen, and dwarves also exist, but they're called squats now.
I can't see them lasting. No one likes dwarves.
That's where you and I disagree. The dwarves are a staple of Warhammer Fantasy, and I see a bright, long future ahead for squats. But the main guys with the setting, the empire of this setting, is the Imperium. And instead of Sigmar, there's the Emperor, and he is pum 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 dead.
We should be so lucky.
And the Emperor is served by the Administratum. They view him as a god, believe it or not. And the Space Marines are their crack troops, and there's also the Imperial Army, their less crack troops, and they're fighting all sorts of orcs and Eldar, that's space elves, and other gripply beasts.
Man, for crack troops of the Imperium, there is a lot of art of them just being fucked up in this book. Just eating copious amounts of shit, and it's hilarious.
I mean, they're crack troops probably because they're on crack. And they're just... those guys are just the biggest, sickos, nastiest gang members they can find, hopped up on drugs, indoctrination, and... filled into a set of armor. But they sure get some of the sweetest guns around.
It's true. The Orky bolt gun seems pretty cool. I like how it's standard. It seems pretty brutal.
Yeah. Both Space Marines and Orcs get the same bolter. The other races have less access to it. And then, you know, it's you... your friend, and the GM, and that's how the game rolls. Pretty standard, I'd say.
Yeah, GMs are pretty common nowadays. It'd be weird to play a war game without one. How would you do hidden movement at all?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of stuff is handled by GM, and I can't see them ever making rules that go without it, especially in this game.
It's a waste of time.
Especially in this game, like, GM has to come up with the scenarios. How do you make a scenario that's, like, you know, well thought out and... well made, but that's us edging very close to the rules section, and I guess we should go to that before our online radio show goes for far too long and nobody and gets so big nobody has the hard drive space to save it.
That's true. We're not Baldur's Gate here. We've got to keep in mind.
Yeah. So the rules of the game. If you've played Warhammer Fantasy, it's probably familiar to you, but if you haven't, the game is set in the game turn is split into one player's turn and the other player's turn. Maybe they call it a phase, I don't know. And first of all, one of the player carries out the movement with their troops. Then they do the shooting, then they do melee. Then there's the psychic phase, then there's the rallying phase, and then there's...
reserves.
Yeah.
Reserves comes after close combat.
Yes.
And sorry, hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, and then there's the then there's the end phase. So, you know, pretty simple. You move your guys, you shoot, you do other things. In this game, you usually control units of dudes. They're oftentimes the five guys per, but the army lists in the back says that Orcs, Space Marine, Eldar, what have you, usually fight in squads of 10. So Space Marines can split before the game into groups of 5, and there are rules for splitting a part of your team off to do other things.
Yeah, and you can order units to do things individually, so you can have your rocket launcher guy stand still and shoot any tanks that comes past while the rest of the machine gunners run up and machine gun.
Yeah, and there's a wide variety of unit profiles. This isn't like your historical game. This is closer to fantasy, so it's not just humans fighting humans. So you have Space Marines who are more skilled and stronger than regular humans, because regular human stat line in this one is like strength 3, toughness 3, ballistic skill 3, weapon skill 3. 3 is all around. And a Marine will be strength, ballistic skill, and weapon skill 4, not toughness 4. They're not that good. There's only so far steroids can take you.
They're no orc.
Yeah, orcs get the toughness 4. Yeah, yeah.
But their big machine guns carry a lot of weight.
Now you might be thinking, what do these numbers mean? Well, there's a difference of how stats are rolled or interacted with. So for ballistic skill, if you're shooting an enemy, you subtract the ballistic skill to find the d6 number to roll over. And then you add or subtract all sorts of modifiers, like for being for target being in cover or in heavy cover. For melee, you compare the weapon skill stats of you and the enemy, and say if those stats are equal, you and the enemy are hitting on fives on a d6.
Can we just specify how it says to make an attack roll with blitzing skill? Because I think it's quite interesting and well worth repeating.
Okay.
If I could just quote it verbatim from the rules. For example, if a character has a BS blitzing skill of 3, the player must roll a 4 or more on a d6 to score a hit. An easy way of remembering this chart is to think of a character with a BS 3 as having a 3 in 6 chance of a hit, brackets, i.e. hits on a 4, 5, or 6. Similarly, a character with a BS of 1 has a 1 in 6 chance of a hit, i.e. hits on a 6. Isn't that simple?
Yeah, I think the subtract from 7 methodology I came up with is better off for new players. Or
I think that's easy to treat it new term, longer as well, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that the charts that you cross-reference are both not that hard to memorize and exist as a quick sheet at the end of the book, if I'm not mistaken. Because another chart you'll want to see is how strength interact with toughness, because strength determines how hard it is to wound an enemy. So once you've rolled your ballistic or weapon skill to hit an enemy, then you have to find out if you can actually wound them. And this compares the strength of the weapon to the toughness of the target. And again, and this time, when the stats are equal, so you wound on 4s. So a strength 3 weapon will wound a human of toughness 3 on a 4 up. And they fall off or rise depending on which way you go to the chart.
They do cap out. A strength 1 creature will never be able to hurt a strength 5 creature natively with their bare fists.
Obviously.
So a human can't punch an elephant to death for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they just lack the gumption.
It's true. Also, I noticed that the shooting chart has wildly more penalties than positives. There's only one positive, that's shooting a large target, say, tank size or bigger. Or a BTR, bigger or bigger. Close combat, you get more bonuses and about an equal amount of penalties. As long as, it seems pretty evens out. The hand-to-hand chart is so silly.
Yeah.
If you're the same or they're one better, it's 4s. Wait, no. If you're the same or it's one better, it's 5s. If you're better than the person, it's 4s. And if you're a lot better, it's 3s or 2s.
Yeah, so the weapon skill chart takes a bit getting around. But the strength toughness chart is easy. It's not much more work than like in other games when comparing like, how do the British line infantry shoot when compared to dervishes or something. Yeah, and there are also stats like initiative, which determines who hits when in melee. So, like, if your troops have higher initiative than the enemy, they hit first, and only the survivors hit back. Each trooper also has an attack rating, which determines how many attack they make. And if your arm
hand to hand,
yeah, hand to hand, not shooting. Shooting is usually one. I don't even know if there are actually weapons that by themselves shoot twice. Though there are follow-up weapons which allow you to shoot another enemy, another target next to your original target if you cause a wound, even if it's saved by armor. And armor in this game is expressed by a rollover. Armor
equal to a rover, yeah.
Yeah, armor, as we've seen, at most goes to 3 up. That's when you take a powered armored model and give it a flak armor to wear underneath. So that's the only source of 3 up, which makes it real powerful. By the way, Space Marine power armor is 4 up, and it's nothing to sneeze at because it's one of the few armor types that don't incur a movement penalty.
The other stats that a character can have outside of, movement, which seems pretty commonly to be 4 inches.
Yeah.
4 inches seems to be the standard move rate for something that's not super fast. Weapon skill, BS, strength, toughness, You got leadership, which is when you get shot too much, you might try and run away. You've got intelligence, which is basically for objectives. Like, can I beep the boop properly? Can I convince the person to do something?
And using weapons. Weapons and equipment in this game are keyed to intelligence. So some of your troopers might be too stupid to use a more sophisticated equipment. And that's when you say, I'll do a brief dip into army building, but that's when, if you want your Gretchen units to have special weapons, you basically need to buy a minor hero for them, because only they are smart enough to shoot something more sophisticated than a blunderbuss.
And that is a lot more than a normal Gretchen.
Yep. That's far stronger and far more expensive.
Yeah, you have a cool value for most characters, for almost all characters, which basically determines how good they are. It's keeping calm, staying cool, not losing control.
Yeah.
And lastly is willpower, which is mental resistance, casting spells. They call them psychic powers in here for some reason. I guess there's one for bending spoons in there, I imagine.
That's your character stat line, and it allows you to do very many things in a near RPG level of play of gameplay in this. Rules are also included for vehicles, for flying vehicles. You have
robots.
Yeah, robots, pre-programmed robots even. You have some stuff about dangerous environments. If I haven't said that already, you have rules for creating all of those vehicles and stuff. You have rules for creating...
There's an incredible amount of granularity offered to the player or games master to choose to manage it. You mentioned army building later on, but the specificity is definitely there.
Yeah.
If you've been unhappy with how your grognards are organized in your Napoleonic games, let me tell you, you won't have that problem here.
Yeah, because it's basically entirely freeform and up to you. So, seeing how we playtested this game in our fabulous Radio Free Australia studio, how would you rate the gameplay? How did you find it?
The smaller the game, the better, I found. Once we got into the higher amounts of miniatures on the game board, it slowed down noticeably. Everything became much more... There's a lot to track on a per model basis, and that can make things take a while. Even with the game's master managing most of it in their head, it's still lots of moving. Everything has to be moved, everything has to shoot, everything has to punch, rather than being like, here's a few guys that matter. It becomes this overwhelming horde of everything that's having blurs together. No one's special anymore.
Yeah, I'd say it's better to run troopers in five-man squads and not have more than maybe 30 of the more mass armies, 30 guys on the table for the more mass armies. You could definitely have fewer guys for something elite as Eldar or Space Marines.
As always, we come back to platoon scale for this sort of level of combat works really well. Like a couple of squads, maybe support weapon or vehicle, and a cool leader to represent yourself on the board. I took great pleasure in shooting JC Dentork in the face many times, and it made me happy.
Yeah, this is what happens when you play these sort of games. The first playtest we had was with the scenario actually included in the game, Battle at the Farm, which pitted around 30 of my orcs against your 20 Space Marines.
About then.
Yeah, my task was to drive the Space Marines out of the farm and to loot the farmhouse. And my orcs just had to advance on a field towards his position. It was a bit unpleasant in that all of my orcs were wearing flak armor, which the marine bolters ignore outright. And I was immediately outranged by Space Marines, which in this scenario have plasma missiles loaded into their launchers, which not only ignores armor, but wounds orcs on freeze.
Yeah, which is an interesting way to bring up weapon deviation, because it was a template. And before firing a template weapon, you of course roll to see if it deviates based on the size of the template. So a half inch template deviates only on a 6. A 2.5 inch, these were radiuses of course, template. So a 5 inch plate would deviate on a score of 2 or more on a d6 roll. And then if it deviates, you then roll a d12 to give you the direction it scatters, because you look at a clock face, and of course, 12 is straight ahead, 6 is behind, 9 left, 3 right, and the d6 the distance. The distance does depend on how far you've thrown it, because you only have deviate, you can't deviate more than half the measured range. So if you throw a grenade an inch, it can't deviate more than half an inch, which is a big deal if you've got like a 2.5-inch radius grenade. Somehow, I'm sure there's one. I haven't looked at everything everywhere, and they're always talking about making new books.
There's a
long, I thought that was interesting. Just
yeah, there's a long list of grenades in this.
Yeah.
And I wonder if
the white dwarfs are getting more every day.
Yeah, the support via white dwarf seems to be like a huge thing for this thing. And as for the, like, getting back to orc armor, I wonder if they didn't give flak armor for the orcs to preserve their movement value, because I think if you move to mesh armor, which is one step better, it's a 5-up save, you lose a half an inch of movement. So it would have taken my orcs even more time to get to the marine farm. You know,
I honestly found the encumbrance to be almost interesting. Like, armor and weapons just straight up slowing your units down makes it really, really interesting to sort of think about what you're ending up with. Because it's very tempting to be like, all right, I want the heaviest armor, I want the biggest guns, and I want my guys to run as fast as they, oh, well, I can only have two of these things. I can't have all three.
It's an interesting conundrum for the player, because some of the heavy weapons are not only too heavy to move and fire, some of them impose movement penalties, which you can, of course, bring down by getting suspensor upgrades, which one of them removes half an inch of penalty
I think it's 3 per item, though. So you can't completely remove an extremely heavy object's penalty, but you can make it better.
Because, like, you know, movement 4 and some weapons are so heavy as to have, like, 2 inches of movement penalty. It's a bit rough at times.
But it's neat. It makes movements... Like in your example of the farm mission where you had to cross a 72-inch board moving 4 to 8 inches a turn, or less than that, packing light's the way to go.
Yeah, because the scenario doesn't explicitly state what the board size should be, but the standard board size as laid out by the game is 6x4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So we took it as that.
Yeah, there's no indication that the farm map should be smaller than that. I do want to bring up one thing. The game actually has fire arcs for models, which is not something I've seen as much, where the model is assumed to have a 90-degree arc in the front that it can shoot at.
Yeah, so that's, I guess, for every model, for each infantryman in the squad.
Yeah, square, round, or hexagonal base, you basically can only see 90 degrees in front of you, which can make for more interesting things we didn't encounter, sort of trying to sneak up and hide from models, because where a model is looking is where it can sort of try to spot someone, and hiding seems very powerful.
Yeah, that's if you are in cover, and if you're not shooting, you can hide and you can't be shot.
Yeah. And moving while hiding is very, very cool.
Yeah, and there's also like terrain limitations, so you can't see into the forests if you're not close enough, and you can't see people in the forest can't see out of it unless they're close enough to the edge. There's also, of course, the wide array of psychic powers you can have. Most races can take psychic powers, and they can go wild in both the level of psychic power they can take, and also in the psychic points that a psyker can have to use their powers. And which is a thing that's interesting enough is, like, if you have more than 12 point of, psychic points left, you don't have to roll for the power. And if you go below that threshold, or if you start below that threshold, as it happens with the lowest class of psyker, you might actually outright fail to cast the power. Just spend those. You know, I think the points are lost. So it really makes psychic powers, I guess, I think, to use easily in the early game, and something that's a lot more dicey at the end, and since I guess it's an interesting dynamic to have.
It definitely encourages you to build a certain way with your psychics, and psychic powers seem really neat, especially in contrast to the mutations, which seem to be a big part of the setting, where lots of mutations seem to be common. Not all of them are like detrimental or positive even. There's a lot of just a thing has happened to you, you're born without, say, a nose, and that's just what you, the way you get to live your life.
Yeah. There's a D100 table for mutations, and not all of them are immediately useful on the tabletop, though I'm sure a good game master will find some way to incorporate a guy having their facial features mixed around on their face, something that is impactful to your scenario or even campaign.
Yeah, it feels like they're inspired in a lot of the way by like Toxic Avenger kind of films, the sort of, you know, mutations from radiation and such. The world's weird, so you've got this odd growth or whatever. Rather than being based on any sort of like how mutations happen. I mean, I get 40,000 years is a long time, but it's not really a long time.
Yeah, I bet. You know, there's also all sorts of bad influences in Warhammer 40k, like warp powers and stuff. And
true, the warp is a big thing in the setting, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have its own army, but there are all sorts of weird warp critters in the vast bestiary of the game that includes both all sorts of aliens and stuff like vampires, if you ever wanted to have vampires in space.
Yeah, or just straight up an entity from the warp here to murder you. Lots of good reasons to go raid the local toy store and find some big grizzlies, like the Cetacean Devil seemed like a fun way to find like a big centipede or millipede and put that down on the board.
Definitely.
A Jenny Stealer also seemed kind of neat, like forearms / through armor. Not quite sure how you'd model it, but there's some cool examples in the book.
Yeah, there's a lot of art in the book, and some of it is colored, some of it is not, and a lot of it is really neat.
I would call some of it good.
Yeah. And, I don't know. I think we can move towards army building at this point, unless we have more rules to discuss. There are a lot of
You've been so restrained, I'll say okay.
Well, there's a lot of rules in this book, but there are also a lot of army building options. By default, you're probably going to play the game with the game master, and the game master will set up the forces for you. But to aid him in this endeavor, there are points values given to all sorts of things in this. Like, so you have the common human stat line, and then you are given instructions on how you can increase it and how much each increase in stat costs. And
weapons have points.
Yeah. Vehicle abilities have points. Basically, a game master doesn't have to draw balance from, you know, just looking at the game and like figuring out like, oh, how powerful is a Zoat? It's a quadrupedal race of the biological nightmares of the Tyranid race. Anyways, so they don't have to rely on their own judgment just how tough a Zoat is when compared to an Imperial Army trooper.
Yeah, it's I imagine it will help out a lot because we're doing such strange things at times. Being able to look at like a Zoat or a Amble and say, oh, that's kind of what a big monster must look like. We can sort of go from there. There is a lot of granularity to the cost of things that I found a bit off-putting. A lot of stuff costs either a quarter or a half of a point. And even with my TI-44, I was struggling to keep some of it straight, and I feel like I may have cheated massively.
Well, we may have cheated.
Simply because, in my defense, I am an idiot.
Yeah, that happens. Not all of us in this hobby can be as smart and good as people creating these games, like Rick Priestley and company, and a handful of good playtesters they had. But yeah, you are given the most basic outlines of what a military formation of a certain race or group would look like. So, you know.
And that's much more of a like a fictional setup than like a mechanical one for the game, which kind of was irksome. It would have been nice to see, like, rather than saying, like, the Space Marines operate in legions of 100 guys made up of squads of 10. Like, well, what is that actually? How would I play that? I see the Crimson Fists led by
Pedro Cantor.
With the red hand. Pedro Cantor or something. He's got 3 squads of 5 guys, but they come in squads of 10. But, so, I'm not sure if that's standard. I know, obviously, they all got blown up because the missile hit their armory, which is very funny and speaks volumes about the actual quality of the Marines we're dealing with.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm just not sure. Like, but a bit more like, hey, I understand that Eldar, space elves,
yes,
force, looks like this. Orcs look like this. Here's all these different factions inside of the orcs, and they all look like this.
Yeah, it would be nice if they had included more details of the table of equipment and organization, because at this point it's usually like, well, a squad is 10 dudes, one of them might have a cool weapon, and one of them might be the leader, and so that goes for Imperial Army, and it goes for Orcs, and it goes for Space Marines, and it goes for Eldar, and I think only Tyranids break the mold, because they're at their basic, they're very beefy dudes, so they're operating in squads of 3s or 4s. But it would be nice if they told us about, like, oh, how the platoon command squad looks like, how maybe the weapon specialist squad looks like.
The Space Marine list, to go back to that, the Imperial peoples have mentioned, like, hey, they've got, like, a bunch of medics and stuff as well in their big battalion, legion, they call it. And it's like, well, how does that fit into their, like, day-to-day battlefield operations?
Yeah.
Should I be expected to bring them along? Is it included? Do they come along after everyone's been shot and try and save whoever they can save?
Do I attach them to a unit? Are there minor heroes, major heroes, or maybe they're just champion level? Because that's usually how the game rates characters. Mm. So a champion is basically, I'd say, a sergeant. And the minor heroes are junior NCOs, and major heroes are your COs that take to the field and shoot the enemy.
And to bring up, to circle back to the farm mission they give us, the squad's Cantor leads are mentioned as having sergeants, but the sergeants themselves get no bonus stats in any way to represent them being special. I understand you can model them to be special, and that's something they've clearly done in some of the imagery, but how do I best represent that myself?
Yeah, the guidance in the game for the factions, it gives you charts to roll on to randomly generate a squad, and the squad leaders usually get more equipment, but not usually any increase in the stats.
Yeah, and those stats rolls themselves seem kind of thought of at the end of the time rather than being pre-considered. So you have, like, the Space Marine Sergeant. I play Space Marines. I'm sorry, I'm going to rant on them for a while because they're the ones I'm familiar with, and I don't want to speak about something I'm not familiar with. That would be a disservice to our handsome, clever, smart listeners. They have a 25% chance, I want to say, of getting a chainsword, or a 5% chance of getting a power glove, or a 5% chance of getting a power axe. So is that a D? I guess it's a D100 roll. Or D4 roll, maybe? And then a 2 through 3. A 2 through 4, I'll roll 2 5% chances.
Yeah.
No? Maybe?
Yeah. There are some bits that are unclear, because, like, for when you're rolling for regular weapons, you just have, like, 5 weapons and they assign a result of a D100 roll to them, and sometimes they are weighted more towards one thing or the other. For example, a Space Marine will have a bolter, I think, on a roll from 1 to 95, and then a small chance of lasgun or autogun or shuriken cannon.
Yeah.
But when it comes to some other things, and then it says, like, oh, there's a 25% chance that a squad will have one of these types of grenades, or 5% chance of having a melee weapon, as Kasa mentioned, and there's like 50% chance that there's that weapon is like a chainsword, and eventually there's like a 30% chance left that it's neither of those weapons. So what do they have at that point? It's some unclear rolling, and I just would have liked it if they just sticked with showing us or telling us or just outlining which D100 results produce what.
Yeah, just say a nothing. Like, hey, you know, like, if it's such a small chance, if it's a 5% chance, then why even make it a chance in my mind?
Because that 5% chance is to get something extremely cool, a power glove. I love it. It's so bad.
It's true. It is. Who am I looking at? I'm looking at the Aztatis. They've got a 15% chance of getting a special grenade, blind crack, like you're cracking a rock, I assume, a frag, or a random not psych out or vortex. Vortex seemed fun. So 50% chance, which is kind of one on a D6, which is what I would have done. But I guess you get the D100Z anyway, so it's easy. And it's also a lot of interesting options, like your basic guns include shurikens for a lot of the time. So I'm just imagining you're shooting like ninja shurikens at people. Like you've got a gun that just like flips them out like a crossbow.
I think that's kind of the implication, though it says that they use magnetic fields to flip shurikens.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so you get so it's a sci-fi feature, but you get guns like autoguns, which are basically guns that you and I are familiar with. Like they shoot caseless ammunition. Because it's the future.
There is just a straight up 1911 in one of the images.
Yeah, the images. The
basic autogun.
Yeah, the images show like the basic auto pistol is basically a 1911. So.
The weapons you have, there's a nice diversity among them. I do think that you are strongly led to taking things that have following fire.
Yeah.
Because following fire is bonkers. And if you don't have it, you're going to regret that.
Yeah, one of my Grot minor heroes that, you know...
Oh, my God.
I'll remind you, Grots, Gretchen, which are smaller orcs. Like, they're goblins to orcs.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of them had a multi-laser, and I shot Casa Space Marine Squad, and I think that was my first turn of shooting. And due to how follow fire works, I think I killed 4 of the 20 Space Marines, which I think paid for the gun and the Gretchen in like that one turn of shooting.
Yeah, it was 4 of 10 because it was my one max strength squad that didn't split into two using their special rules. And it wasn't a great feeling to realize that I needed a 6 to save my guys and you needed 2+ and then 2+ to hurt me. And then you had to fail either of those rolls to not go again. Me making the armor save wasn't stopping this happening to me.
Yeah.
You failing a roll stops this happening to me.
Because the thing explicitly said in the rules is that as long as you cause the wound, even if it's saved, so, you know, by rolling an armor save, you still roll until you fail to cause a wound.
Yeah. Correction, it's a stub gun that is basically 1911.
Okay.
Just for people who wanted to start yelling at us. So please make those comments on our Twitter post anyway. You really showed us.
Yeah, Twitter, which is how we call our BBS. So
we just talk about birdsong all the time.
Yeah, well, who could have guessed that a bird spotting podcast would evolve? So... And like we mentioned, you also get a chance to have a vehicle assigned to your troops, and the 100 roll says just what kind of vehicle you'll have. Maybe it's a crawler, which I think can burrow underground. It can be a wheeled vehicle. It could be a hovercraft. It could be a flying vehicle. And while the game has like an example, one of each. Like the Vincent Black Shadow motorbike for all the meanest dudes out there. You are encouraged to roll up your own and design your own. There's like pound points value provided. And then you'll know everything you need to know about the vehicle. What armor save it has, what toughness it has, how many damage points it can take. What's the turning radius of the vehicle? What's the acceleration, deacceleration speed? Like all sorts of good stuff.
Honestly,
like that.
The specificity with which you can make a vehicle reminds me a lot of that other sci-fi-ish war game GURPS.
Yeah.
Which has all their like vehicle making rules as well. I'm not gonna say they're similar. They're similar in the sense that you sort of spend points to make things and better things are more expensive. GURPS is a lot more granular. But if you're coming from GURPS and you know how to make a good tank, you're probably gonna come here and make a good tank.
Yeah, yeah. So find yourself a game master who knows how to play GURPS, and he'll be able to master Rogue Trader for you.
Yeah, there's also a lot of the strange vehicle stats. Like, you have acceleration, you have maximum speed, deceleration, minimum speed.
Well, I don't know, man. I think it's a necessary part of realism because, like, you know, a game turn is a fairly short amount of time, and you don't expect a tank to floor it and immediately go up to 20
That's
inches.
True.
It was a bit funny when my Dark Eldar hovercraft that I made had a maximum speed of 20 inches, but an acceleration of only 3. So that's 6 turns of accelerating to get there.
Oh God! And then you ran my Space Marines over with it, and they all fell over. It was the worst.
Well, yes, but it took me some time to get up to that speed. But on the other hand, seeing how the game lasts basically indefinitely, there isn't like a fixed amount of turns you're going to play.
It lasted until we pushed the button in the middle, so that felt like a natural endpoint because the objective was achieved rather than sort of like annihilation, which never makes sense. Because at some point, someone will run away. If all of your friends are dead...
Yeah. It wouldn't make sense that, you know, the squads have rules for running away when some of the individual squad models are dead and not having rules for the entire army throwing in the towel because a lot of it is dead. So, I'm sure they're going to rectify that little bit in the future.
Yeah, a good commander should know when the jig is up.
Yeah,
when they should cut their losses and run.
When it's not worth continuing.
But yeah, like making your models, once you've started them up, you can get to like actually modeling them. And the game seems to really encourage you to have everyone look the way they should. So you don't want to sort of... But the game does come with tokens. There are some pretty neat looking cutout-able bits. I was pretty loath to cut up my book though. And it was hard to bend the spine on the library printer, but we managed. I'm not happy, but we managed.
Yeah. Already have all the orcs and space marines. You need to start out with the battle at the farm, but the developers understand that you might not have all the models you want for sale or whatever other circumstances. So there's a lot of advice in the book on how to build your own terrain and paint your own models.
Yeah, a lot of this seems to be transferred across from basically historical gaming. I've seen a lot of the same stuff talked about when discussing like Napoleonics or World War II games with mates, like polystyrene boards, teddy bear fur. Nothing seems revolutionary. And the boards they're all playing on seem pretty sparse. Very cool. Very cool photos of their terrain. I can't stress enough how cool the boards they're playing on look. But they do look on the barren side.
Yeah. So, you know, if you have experience built up from playing all your fantasy games and all your Napoleonics, you already know how to build the material. And if you have buildings left over from fantasy and historics, I think the game encourages you to use them as well, because the Imperium is a vast galactic empire. It basically encompasses the entire galaxy, and so all sorts of weird worlds are on it, and space marines recruit from the more archaic throwback planets to have the angriest guy to give their drugs to.
And the game does mention lower tech places a lot as well, even not just recruiting, but also for people who tithe to the Imperium. When the warp storms calm down, whatever a warp storm is.
Yeah, and with once you want to collect space marines and your Imperial Army stuff, well, Games Workshop works with Citadel, and they produce all sorts of cool models for that. I think
their catalogs are everywhere.
Yeah, and I think they even produce at least a single vehicle for this, the iconic Land Raider, which is like... what if a Mark IV tank was a lot more tread and a lot less hull?
It somehow still fits 20 people inside of it.
Well, they say that they have a cutout and they say that it fits 10, though I find it highly doubtful.
Oh, one sec. Maybe 10 crew. Mark IV, was it the Mark V that had about 10 people for all the machine guns? But, you know, It's the future. Maybe they use magic to make them smaller.
I mean, they say that all troopers carry infinite grenades because grenades are small about coin size. So maybe the crew is also small in coin size.
There are grots. It makes sense.
Yeah. If orcs can use grots for everything, maybe the Imperium uses hobbits and squads for their machine crews.
It does mention some sort of short person in the Imperium, but I can't remember what they were called. They didn't come up a lot, so.
Yeah, I think it was actually hobbits or halflings. But, yeah.
Yeah, and you can also, their metal models are advertised in the back of the book. They're Imperial Space Marines or their Space Orc Raiders, both available, if you can get to the USA or Canada, or if you're lucky enough to live near Nottingham, which seems to be where they're based, wherever Nottingham is.
Yeah, I'm sure it's somewhere where Thatcher hasn't eaten it yet. But outside of Space Marines, I guess basically any miniatures will work for anything. A Space Orc Raider is just your orc that has exchanged a bow for a bolter. Wouldn't take you too much to sculpt one yourself. A bolter is a fairly easy shape. It's a blocky gun with a sickle mag and a pistol grip. So,
and all the monsters basically just cheap shop critters, like a weird bear with claws, dinosaur,
big centipede,
big bug. Yeah,
literally a vampire. Though if you are a GM is brave enough, they might make the vampire be an Aldar or an orc.
Ooh, that could be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Cetacean stuff is interesting. I know. It's the modeling's opportunities are there if you've got the time and the energy and the willpower. I've been hearing bad things about lead models, so I'm kind of iffy, but don't lick them, seems to be the advice.
Yeah, I mean, if you are a smart enough lad to play miniature games, you probably are smart enough lad to not lick your miniatures. That's entirely unnecessary. Just give them a few licks of paint. Hey! Because there's, painting advice in this too, because you want your Space Marines to look as best as they can. Crazed maniacs in power armor, but still.
There's a lot of different colored maniacs in this book too.
Yeah,
it's neat.
So this seems like it could have legs. It's already an evocative universe. They just need to expand it a little more. Though it's
kind of reductive. It's too much like everything else. Like the Tyranids are so clearly ripped off from most science fiction horror films. The Imperium being like, "Brah, machines are bad." I've read Dune. We've all read Dune.
Well, I've read Nemesis, Dave should have, and if you're worrying enough about 2000 AD to append your game name with a cumbersome Warhammer 40k title, so Dave probably read Nemesis the Warlock as well. Though the Emperor is very different from Torquemada, who was out and about doing things.
I don't know. We'll see how they go. I mean, good luck to them. That's all small creators. Want to see them do well and make us for a more diverse industry. A rising tide lifts all boats, after all.
Yeah. Was it? Did we just bungle into our compliment sandwich segment, or are we going to ignore it?
We can go into it, sure.
Yeah, so for compliment sandwich, I'll let you go first. What was the one thing that you like about this game, this rogue trader?
Many things. It's an interesting thing that does lots of things that I quite like some of those things. They're good things in general. This small-scale skirmish, it's fun. Small-scale skirmish sci-fi games are relatively few and far between. So it's nice to see a new one come out. It doesn't have license attached to it, so you can have a little more fun with it.
Yeah, the scale is nice. Like with historical game, you're usually used to one guy representing 50, and here one Space Marine is one Space Marine, and you don't have that many Space Marines. So that is a nice thing about the game. And personally, what I like is that they actually really put a lot of thought into their setting, and there's a lot of variety provided, not only for stuff that's immediately useful on the battlefield, but also the technology and the language of the Imperium. Maybe more detail would be better about the, you know, non-human races, but, you know, they just started the game. I'm sure they'll have time and expand it, like, you know, as much as they need it to make it viable and sophisticated enemies.
I look forward to seeing every faction expanded to the level that the Imperium have. The Space Marines seem like a pretty complete faction. I can't imagine they have much more in the way of releases coming, since they're just guys in power armor with different kinds of guns. Yeah. And how do you really monetize that? But like Orcs, Gene Stealers, Eldar all have a lot of variety coming, because they're all basically unarmored critters. So that'd be cool.
I'd like to see more stuff coming for both the Orc Raiders and the Imperial Army. Because, like, you know, currently their squad structure is the same as the Space Marine squad structure, so there's not much going for them. And they could really, like, you know, please some historical gamers among us by giving us various, like, force organization structures that mimic some real-world militaries, both historical and current. Or maybe they'll innovate and do something like, so this is the future army, and this is how the future army will look like.
The Rangtang army seems really fun, because they're just apes with guns that really explain how they work. They're just smart enough to make it work, and no one's quite sure if they know what they're doing, but damn, their guns are good.
Yeah, the Rangutangs are called Chokairo. I guess that means that they're supposed to be a joke. But I don't know. Their weapons are definitely no joke.
Yeah, for each one you have is an extra attack, and doesn't seem to penalize you in any way. You just get a bunch of free les guns.
Yeah.
Which adds up.
So I think somewhere in there was my first good point, first positive point about the game. Now let's move to your negative point, if you will.
The granularity doesn't push the game forward at all. There are something like 65 basic guns, and the 65 basic guns, and none of them matter. Like a bolt gun slightly stronger than a las gun. Okay, there's probably a better way to explain that to the player without them having to like keep in mind that, oh, you've got a bolt gun. How is that different again? Oh, you've got a las gun. What does that do again? Like, oh, they're all kind of roll the d6.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with you, because like the book tells us time and again that the Orcs and Space Marines like bolt guns because they're big, loud, and powerful. And the only difference between them and a las gun is, if I remember correctly, that they are strength 4 and not strength 3, which is not a lot. And like the main difference between a las gun and an auto gun is that an auto gun has a longer range, which is like, you know, strange you'd think lasers would have better range since the laser doesn't fall off with range, but maybe they're trying to make a statement about like lasers dissipating in the atmosphere or something. But yeah, the guns could use more distinctiveness, could use more difference between them, because I don't know, a chain sword at this point is just a sword that's strength 4, which does nothing for Space Marines and is actually a downgrade for a Space Marine or an Orc hero if they take it, because they're usually more than strength 4.
Yeah, the close combat weapon chart having a bunch of like ranges that matter, because you don't roll to hit like you would a shooting attack with a hefty weapon or a hand weapon. It just feels like there's a bunch of stuff in there that's just needlessly there to pad out page space.
Yeah, some of this could be ironed out.
Yeah, you could clean it up, tighten it up a little bit. It is a big book, and you know, the less time you spend talking about redundant guns, the more time you can spend talking about the Tyranids, who seem quite heroic to my mind. I think they're in it. They're in it for a good chance.
I wouldn't say the Tyranids aren't exactly heroic, but they're an interesting race. Nobody knows what they want. They're just traveling in their massive fleets, eating a world now and again. They have their own evolved bioweapons. They have a bunch of slave races that they use to complement their own troops. And yeah, I wonder if, like, you know, there will be like actual meaningful conflict between them and the Imperium, where they like clash over some sort of maybe ideological rift.
I can't see there being one, because the Imperium themselves also benefits massively from slave labor themselves, which talks about. They try to stamp it out, but the sheer scale of the Imperium means it seems to be impossible for them, so they kind of just like turn a blind eye to it, which to me is much more, much eviler than just simply like, yeah, no, we enslave lesser races because, well, not lesser races, because they're a different species entirely. So, but yeah, I don't know.
Well,
interesting stuff.
I think they either produce a drug or they generated Zotes to be like fully independent creatures that are also very pliable to slavery or something. So, but maybe we'll get a Zote rebellion or something in the future.
Ooh.
That would be an interesting plot. But for me, I'm going to say that my least favorite thing is all the not increments. How do you call them? Fractions.
Will help.
Fractions.
Yeah.
I don't like fractions. I don't like measuring 3.5 inches of movement. I don't like.
Oh, inches! Why inches? Oh.
Yeah, man. The
perfect centimeters is there.
Yeah, centimeters are perfectly fine and perfectly there. And also, what I don't like is fractions and point costs. It's like, why would you have something cost like half a point if you could just like, you know, increase all, multiply all prices by all the point costs by 10 and then have all the granularity without all the annoying fractions?
It does feel like you would be thinking about your army much bigger, though. You go from having like 200 points of Space Marines to 2,000 points, and that feels like a much bigger investment.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to do some psychology there, but hey, psychology, yeah. Ooh.
It's only $9.99, not $10.
Yeah, yeah. If you didn't get the reference because you don't have the book, psychology is the rules that that covers things like terror and fear in this game. So, yeah, we don't like the pointless granularity and we don't like the fractions, but what's another thing that we do like?
You can go first because I went first last time.
Okay, I like a lot. I like the fairly, well, not exhaustive, but a fairly long list of aliens and all sorts of monsters.
Hmm.
It's an interesting. It's realistic and interesting to see factions that aren't, you know, player controlled. They bring some liveliness to the battlefield. It's not a, you know,
GM characters.
Yeah, the battles aren't fought over empty spots of grounds where nothing has any influence. And while in human warfare, you're probably not gonna encounter a bear that's like, you know, has a decisive impact on your combat. But you're fighting over alien worlds where even plants and the ground itself wants to eat you. It's a real, like, you know, Harry Harrison death world shit.
Space dog eat dog. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I like having this, all the stuff to make the battlefields more livable and believable.
Yeah, it's a really cool lever for the games master to have to make the world, make the combats much more engaging. I think my other positive is going to be like a third of the art is really cool, and some of the photos are dope. Like there's like a two-dimensional diorama they've got of like orcs fighting the space elf.
Space Marines, I think. And is it the one diorama where there's a dreadnought, quote unquote, crashing through a wall?
No, it's on page 180. Is the one I'm thinking of. And it more looks like the dwarves versus the Eldar versus the Eldar and the dwarves.
Oh yeah, it's let me remind you again, squads fighting Eldar, and the Eldar have a freaky landing craft that looks a bit like a galley. And yeah, and there's
also... Oh yeah, no, you're right. The one, the Space Marines fighting the orcs through the wall, and the big robot crashing through is very cool as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. Yeah, that's immediately evocative of the kind of game it wants you to think you could play with it. I don't know about the different levels. But yeah, it's dope.
Yeah, it is dope. It is well and lavishly illustrated book. So, with that in mind, would you, other showrunner co-host Casa, would you play Rogue Trader Warhammer 40k?
Probably not. Setting doesn't really engage me. The idea of drugged up super Nazis shooting people to enforce their will isn't super engaging.
I mean, it is realistic considering where the UK is trending currently, yeah. But...
Look at the Sino-Russian War. I'm sure they're all doing their best to stay clean over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Afghan War, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so good at words. And that's not like a moral failure of the game or the characters. It's sort of like, I like my stuff skewing a bit brighter, a bit lighter.
The sort of like almost space fantasy thing, I don't know how much purchase it has. And while I have my Warhammer Fantasy army of orcs and goblins, I don't know if I'm willing to take them and recreate them as space orcs and goblins, or if I'm willing to pay another fortune, thanks Radio Free Australia for paying my yearly wages, if I'm ready to pay another fortune to get more orcs and goblins that I would cut up and then make into space orcs and Gretchen.
Mm. Yeah, it's no easy way to like mass produce the pieces you'd need to convert them either. So you have to sort of spend a weekend with some mates chopping and chopping.
Yep, yep. I mean, the game looks promising. The guy, Rick Priestley, seems like he's promising, and they have a few
He's
guys.
Quick on all the stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll work on more stuff in the future. I can't wait to see what he does next. Can't wait to see more nice miniatures from Citadel, though I hope they don't forget their fantasy line. Don't just go after the newest and shiniest. But I mean, if that sort of space fantasy thing suits you, just go ahead, play it. It's great. Just get two of your mates and GM a game for them, or find the guy who always wants to GM more than he wants to play, so that this will be a treat to him.
Your favorite backseat moderator, quarterbacker, backseat driver guy, that's who you're going to want to be the GM for this. And they're going to love it.
Yeah, and That's it for the review, I guess. And
that's a game.
Yeah, that's the game of drugs and power armor. So this was Fortified Niche, and we'll be back next time with the game for refighting the Falklands.
Ooh.
Bye.
Bye.